Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity.
Well, welcome back to our Abound in Hope podcast. It's great to have you here with us. We're grateful for a time to be able to dive into conversations about the fruit of the Spirit. It's where we're at right now. So my name is Darren Larson, and I'm sitting here with two of our favorite guys.
Tom Regan is here.
And Tom McGregor's here.
Those are my favorite guys. Rex is also here, but he's sitting behind the camera right now. Behind the microphone. So he matters, but we didn't have enough microphones today because we have a really special guest with us today. So special guest, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Jean Wu, and I've been going to Imprint since it started.
Boom.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Remember your family?
My husband's Chiang Wu, and we were thinking about it. We've been married for almost 20 years now.
Yeah. Sweet.
And we have three kids. Cody, who's 17, Davey, who's 13, and Bethany is 7. So I have one in high school, one in middle school, one in elementary school. Yikes!
Whoa, that's super cool. And they just kind of got started today, I imagine. Is that right?
Cody starts tomorrow.
Okay.
And then Bethany starts next week. Huh. And Davey is just, he's homeschooled, so all the way through.
Wow.
So he doesn't really have a start date.
That's very cool. Yeah. Can you tell us, how did you become a Christian?
I was born into a family, a Christian family. So I think my faith was one of those, like, it wasn't very dramatic in that sense. It was, you know, it's just, you know, I grew up through Sunday school, and my faith kind of just grew very slowly as a child. And I think, when I was 12, we're from a Presbyterian family. So I made the decision to affirm my faith.
Yeah.
And so I went through a confirmation.
Cool.
And, so I've always felt like I've always believed in God and in Jesus. But I think when I fully claim my Christian faith, I mean my adult faith, I think that was later on. That was after college.
Was there anything in particular that caused that? Like, man, I'm gonna start following Jesus more fully for myself?
Yeah. So we came to America when I was 16.
Where are you from, Gene?
Oh, man.
I'm from Singapore.
Singapore! So cool.
So my family came to America when I was 16 because of my father's work.
Yeah.
And it was, my father was a pastor in Singapore before we came. And so when we came, it really was God's calling to be here. My dad was got a job in Maui.
Tough living.
And he was hired to help find help build a school for leaders in developing nations.
Yeah.
And so it was very clear that we came for for work for the Lord.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to come. And so there was a period of time where I was very angry and very depressed and very just really angry because my life didn't go the way it's supposed to go.
Yeah.
You know, as 16-year-old, like being taken away from all your friends.
And some big emotions when you're 16, I imagine, too. Yep.
Yeah. So then when I was applying for college, I was like, I'm going to go as far away as I can. So I call that period my Jonah period. And so I went to a school that I never saw, to a place that I never visited, to a state that I've never been.
And where is this?
I went to Peoria, Illinois.
Whoa.
The test market capital of America. And I was, because when I first came to America, Maui, I was just like, wow, this is not the America I imagined. Yeah. And I'm like, I want to see America. So if that's the test market capital of America, I'll go there. And it was like, whoa, that's...
You should have stayed in Maui.
Seriously.
But college, I think, college was a quiet time when it comes to my conversations with God. I mean, I still believe in God and I believed in Jesus, but I just wasn't really walking with him. Mm. And I know my parents prayed a lot for me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until right after college and I was going to Chicago to look for work. When I graduated, the stock market in Asia crashed. There was no jobs, so I couldn't go home. Mm. And so my college advisor said, you know, go to Chicago. You know, like, there'll be lots of jobs there. Go get a job downtown. Uh-huh. Build a resume. So I remember very vividly on my drive to Chicago, I kind of was like, you know, God, you know, it's really empty. This past few years have been really empty. Uh-huh. And it was interesting. There was a Tammy Trent song playing, and it was like, "Welcome Home." Huh. And it kept saying, "Welcome Home." And I'm like, you know, I think, you know, I really felt like that spoke to me, like God is asking me to come back.
Wow.
And so so I made a commitment there that, you know, like, I will find a church. I will find community. I know what I needed to do. It's just I didn't do it when I was in college. Huh. So after college, when I was in Chicago, that was one of the things that was a priority for me, to find a church, find community, and really dive back into, you know, an active relationship with him.
Mm. That's super cool.
Yeah.
I suppose one of the things that I hear in that story is that God was faithful to you, which is interesting because that's our subject of today, you know. Maybe that'll give me a chance to transition. Thanks for sharing that. First of all, that's super cool. Which is also the place where you met Chiang, right?
So, yes.
Yeah. God was faithful to you and bringing you back in a relationship with him. Then you had a relationship with a husband out of it too. Right. So
yeah. He brought me to this amazing community of young adults in Chinatown. So I was in church in Chinatown. And everyone was just really eager for community and growing and learning. So that was a really, really good time. Like, I had accountability. I had an accountability partner. Hmm. And she actually just visited.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
We had dinner last night.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so.
Well, that's a great kind of kickoff to our subject of today. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we're in this series on the fruit of the Spirit. Which is the work of the Spirit in Christians' life to develop characteristics that are much like Christ and that we get to participate in two ways. One is that the Spirit empowers us to do these things and to see them and to help us grow in them, but also to strive for them in our own lives as well, which is God's faithfulness to us to help us kind of push us in that direction. And so this is number 7 of 9. Is that right? No. Yes, it is number 7 of 9. And so this is from Galatians 5:22, where Paul says the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. The law is not against such things. So this beautiful picture of like walking in the Spirit and allowing the Lord to develop these things in us as we cooperate with him. And so, you know, Gene's story at the beginning just reminded me of God's faithfulness as well as in the calling of to your life to be a faithful Christian and to follow the Lord as well. And so since we're in faithfulness, I figure we'd just spend some time chatting about today. So thank you, Gene, for being here and being willing to talk through it. So I'll kick off with this question with the dodgeball roll really slowly down home plate to ask you guys the question of what is faithfulness?
Did you mean softball or dodgeball?
Dodgeball's cooler.
Okay. Dodge?
Because it's a huge ball.
You're throwing something
I think
at
you
us.
Mean kickball.
Oh, dodge. I do mean kickball. Are we recording? Quick.
That's a like, sure wait, way to lose the game. You're like dodgeball.
You're like throwing something at us.
I meant kickball. So I meant that big ball that you roll down towards home plate that you can go kick.
Yeah, the funnest game on the playground.
Because not everyone can hit a softball, you know.
No.
What do you guys think? What is faithfulness?
I think basically the reliability of God. Hmm. So it's tied up with trustworthiness and God's truthfulness, and we can get there, right? But if I just had to give sometimes we understand things by synonyms. I was enjoying listening to the kindness podcast. I wasn't here for that one. You guys like struggled for an hour to kind of bring definition to it, but
we totally did.
You realize like you just need to sort of bring a sort of constellation of words and ideas to flesh it out, and it's not like escape. Like the meaning's not going to escape us if we like explore. Mm-hmm. But I think at least with this word faithfulness, it almost easier to put a synonym to it is God's reliability, like
reliability.
His dependability, like he is faithful. Hmm. He stays true to his word. So that's why the truth is mixed up. Bound up in that and the understanding of his faithfulness. God speaks things. He keeps his word. He's faithful. He's therefore reliable. Mm-hmm. He's de- he's trustworthy, he's dependable.
I think the word that the Bible most often translates or uses most is translated either faithfulness or faith.
Yeah.
And I think that's helpful for me. I feel like this is the easiest fruit of the Spirit we've talked about, the easiest dimension, because it's so much more distinct. Mm-hmm. And so faithfulness, like Tom said, is God's reliability, and which elicits a faithful response in us of faith, loyal trust. Mm-hmm. God is trustworthy, and so we give him our loyal trust. God is reliable, and so we give him our faithful allegiance. And so it's almost like it's got two components depending on who the party is.
Uh-huh. Good.
What do you think, Gene? Ideas?
Well, I went to Oxford.
Nice.
And looked, and reliability is one, but you know, it said the definition of faith was a complete trust and confidence in someone or something. Hmm. And it's and credence, confidence, conviction, reliance. For me, it was like what you said, Tom, it was reliance, like reliability.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Coming up with a synonym
and trust,
for that.
Yeah.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So where do we see that in Scripture? Like, where do we see God's faithfulness portrayed? Actually, I'll ask it in two ways. One is in the Bible text and also in history. I mean, how do we see, how do we understand what faithfulness is? How do we understand that God is reliable?
I think the first time it really shows up is, it shows up in the beginning of the Bible. But let's skip ahead 12 verses and God's faithfulness to Abraham. Or not verses, 12 chapters. God is faithful to Abraham. The word group that the Hebrew Bible and the Greek translation use are all over the Abraham story. Yeah. So it's Abraham believed God, or amend, or if you're looking in the Greek translation, it's a pistis, which is, you know, New Testament language for faith or faithfulness. Yeah. So Abraham believes God, considers him trustworthy, and then God considers him righteous.
Yeah.
And so I think Abraham looks at what God has done, calling him out of a life of idolatry, you learn later in the Bible.
Yeah.
It stays with him, is present with him, going into this strange place, you know, like coming from home.
Singapore to Hawaii.
Going to a new
Singapore
place.
To Peoria.
Yeah.
I bet you Singapore to Peoria was much worse than Singapore to Maui. But I'm just saying.
I think that's the thing. Like, the only thing we know about God is in relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, the only things that he communicates to us have to do with his relationship to us. There's no, like, a special revelation that doesn't have some bearing on our relationship to him. And so the presence of God with Abraham, his faithfulness to him to not only be with him, but to provide for him, to protect him, to rescue him out of his own stupid life choices. To me, that's like a paradigm that starts very early and then kind of grows up in through the narrative.
Right, and then it goes to the people of Abraham, like the nation of Israel, like they end up in slavery in Egypt. And God has made these promises to Abraham's descendants that he's going to make them into a great nation. He's going to bring them into a land. And now he is redeeming, rescuing the people of Israel who are enslaved out of slavery in Egypt. And he is going to bring them into this promised land. This is 400 years or so of slavery, as God had promised was going to happen.
So despite circumstances.
Right, God is still faithful. Yeah. Yeah, he's still faithful. He's fulfilling his promises. I'm going to take you out of bondage, and I'm going to bring you into a land.
Well, and
of
then
your own.
He gives a bunch of promises that seem like they're pretty irrevocable, and asks for Israel's faithfulness, and then they're not faithful. They're totally faithless.
The whole history story of them is their unfaithfulness, but God's faithfulness.
But God's faithful anyway. He figures out a way to make good on his promises, to stay in relationship to a faithless people who, from, like, you know, the golden calf incident on, are really blowing it.
Well, kind of in the middle of that whole thing, you get Exodus chapter 34, where he explains his character to Moses, right? And then you have this moment where it's been probably one of the biggest aha moments for me in this Fruit of the Spirit series, is how much we don't know what these characteristics are apart from the character of God. That's probably been, and I think I kind of knew that theoretically, but I think as we've been unpacking them for all these weeks, I've been realizing how much more we have to ground these things in the character of God, because there's cultural definitions on one side of these things like love or kindness that we looked at recently. As Tom mentioned a minute ago, we were thinking about things like, you know, what does kindness mean in our culture? But until you actually have a biblical grounding of what it is through the character of God, you're not sure what it is. So Exodus 34, where God describes himself to Moses, he says, "The Lord is a compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger and abounding in faithful love and truth, maintaining faithful love to 1,000 generations, forgiving iniquity, rebellion, and sin, but not leaving the guilty unpunished, bringing the father's iniquity on the children," et cetera, et cetera. And you get this picture of like, wow, talk about disobedience, as McGregor just mentioned, and all of a sudden God's going to proclaim himself as being faithful in his love, faithful in his grace, faithful in his slowness to anger, and all that kind of stuff. I imagine, Gene, you have a bit of that in your story, like of you even sharing right off the bat. Like, I imagine you experience God's faithfulness to you. You're raised in a Christian family. Your dad's rad. I know your dad. He's such a good man. And to know that God was faithful to you, to not just your family, but to you. I don't know if that meant a lot to you as you think about your story.
Yeah, I think when I started to look back and see, when I was going through that, like, that frustration of, like, why am I here? Why did he, take me away from all my friends? I could understand it, but besides the fact that, my parents are being faithful to him, mm-hmm. and so they made this decision to come. Mm. But later on, when I looked back, like, when I was a young adult, and I looked back at my 16-year-old self and my 17-year-old self, and then I realized, God was so kind, huh. and so, he knew, I mean, he's all-knowing, so he knew this was going to happen. Yeah. He knew my heart, and he knew how upset I would be. But what he did was, the 2 years prior before coming to America, he had introduced me to fantastic friends, and huh. these friends are, like, we're still friends today, and we're a really tight group. There are four of us, and one of them is my best friend, and she and I didn't go to the same school, and so what happened was we wrote to each other, because we weren't allowed to call each other and talk endlessly.
Yeah.
So
that
we would
been
write.
Expensive. Yes.
So we wrote to each other while we live in Singapore. And for 2 years, we wrote postcards, we wrote letters, and now looking back, I can see, God was actually cultivating in us a habit of writing to one another, so that when I came to America, we had that habit already.
Yeah.
And I can now see that, but back then I was just so angry.
Yeah, yeah.
But God was, in a way, like, he was like preparing all of that. And so that he could, in a sense, soothe some of the loneliness that way. And I see that as his faithfulness to me in that way, that he cared for me that way. And obviously, the period where I was just quiet, that was, I wasn't really walking with him. Mm. And for him to say, you can come back to me anytime. Like, I'm here waiting for you.
Well, you bring up one of the great difficulties of understanding faithfulness, and that is it's a lot of times it takes years to understand faithfulness. I mean, as these stories that you guys just told, the Israelites abounding in disobedience, and then God was abounding in love, your story of not knowing God's character and yet preparing you for something, it took you years and years to understand how God was really faithful. And that's probably one of the harder parts of faithfulness, is like we can name characteristics or synonyms, as Tom said a minute ago, but until you really experience this, like, it takes a long time to really understand.
Right. I think about the analogy, like two of the analogies of God's. So I appreciate McGregor. You said that faithfulness is understood in the context of relationship. You can't really understand faithfulness outside the context of relationship. So two like overriding metaphors in the Old Testament for God's relationship to his people. Yeah. One is marriage, husband to wife.
Good.
And one is father to son. Yeah. So think about the marriage relationship. If you've been married a day, you could be like, have you been faithful to your spouse? Yeah, for a day. And you would experience legitimate like faithfulness.
Yeah.
But then talk to a couple that's been married for 50 years, then you can really start understanding and appreciating faithfulness. See what I'm saying? Yeah. So I'm agreeing with you, Darren.
Totally.
Like time is something that it takes to learn and to experience the faithfulness of God.
Yeah.
Like the longer you walk with him, the more you can see and appreciate, hopefully, his faithfulness to you.
Yeah, I think the marriage analogy is helpful because faithfulness doesn't just mean doing the right things. You know, like if Chiang, I don't know, washed the dishes and made dinner every single night, and like, he did nice things, but there was no connection in your relationship, no care, no presence, you know, emotionally and physically. I'd have a hard time saying he was very faithful. And I think that's what God does, is not only does he treat us well and do the right things, but he is emotionally, psychologically, and physically present with us, in the way that he does that.
That's cool. I'd like to explore maybe for just a second here, a couple more verses on faithfulness I think you guys might know, but to contrast those with what we might say would be a cultural definition of faithfulness versus kind of a biblical picture of faithfulness. So I don't know if that's too esoteric for you guys. Okay, I see a thumbs up. Tell me what you're thinking, McGregor.
Well, I think the Bible is always a good idea. that was my thumbs up.
That does seem correct. Yeah, totally.
I kind of wonder if maybe there's not as much disparity between a cultural understanding of faithfulness and a biblical, where like along the lines of kindness, you know, we talked about niceties or being nice, whereas probably most people would describe like what's in culture, even among non-Christians, what does it mean to be faithful? Yep. You keep your word, you know, you're reliable. So I'm not saying we could explore. I just don't know that the difference is as stark, I guess. But open to hearing what do you think?
No, I totally, I'm with you. And I think that's probably best expressed in that idea of marriage. We all know what it means to be unfaithful in your marriage, right?
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you were just illustrating. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing more devastating in society than that. I mean, there's TV shows about that. It's a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're probably right.
Yeah, I think, so maybe sometimes we understand definitions or concepts by
opposites.
Fleshing out the opposite. Like unfaithfulness is when someone doesn't keep their word. When you vow to keep your word to your spouse, but then you violate that, there's a violation of trust that's there, you know? And so it just highlights the fact that tied up or bound up with an idea of faithfulness is remaining true to what you have said and what you have promised. And that is the picture of God. One of the most bizarre things for me, my Bible reading plan always has me, you know, going through the entire Bible. And as I'm reading through the prophets, like especially in Isaiah, it's this alternation between judgment and hope and judgment and hope. And there's these devastating passages of God's impending judgment. There's such severity. And then it's like, and then I'm going to bring you to myself. And then I'm going to, you know, and God always comes back around and he always ends on the hope.
Yeah.
Like that's the final note that God's faithfulness will not be nullified by his people's unfaithfulness.
We just got out of Romans 9 through 11 not long back, and that's the understanding that we gave of Romans 9 through 11, how God is remaining faithful to the Jewish people, but enlarging his people to include the Gentiles to actually fulfill the promises that he had made to the Gentiles all the way back. And, you know,
Well, and the promise to Israel to include the nations.
That's
You know, Isaiah 66 and the ushering in of a multi-ethnic people of God.
Totally. Yeah. Give any other scriptures that we can think of that you guys looked up that were on faithfulness or things that we can see pictures of faithfulness in scripture? I'd love to hear those.
This just came to mind. I hadn't written this down, but this came to mind as you asked the question. There's this beautiful saying in 2 Timothy 2, starting in 11, and verse 13 is where I want to land. The saying is trustworthy, for if we have died with him, we will also live with him. If we endure, we will also reign with him. If we deny him, he will also deny us. If we are faithless, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself.
Yeah, good.
So if we are faithless, now that doesn't mean sinless, obviously, you know.
Totally.
But if we stumble in faithfulness to him, he's not going to return that
yeah.
and be unfaithful to, well, they were unfaithful to me, so I'm going to be unfaithful to them. No, he's going to maintain his word to us.
Yeah.
Even despite our faithlessness, because he can't deny himself. He's totally. Promised to be faithful to us. And Paul's saying he cannot deny himself. There are some things God cannot do. You know, when we think of omnipotence,
outside of the character of God
yeah,
to be
omnipotence
unfaithful.
Doesn't mean to be yeah. able to do anything that you can possibly conceive of. Omnipotence means God can do all things, and all those yeah. things are going to be consistent with his character. God cannot deny himself.
Yeah, that's good.
I think Habakkuk 2:4 is kind of that classic one that highlights the kind of the semantic range of the New Testament's
totally.
Use of pistis, but says the righteous person will live by his faithfulness.
Uh-huh.
And,
by whose faithfulness, McGregor?
So that's what I was going to get to. I was like, we can get into the nerdy language stuff, but
just give it a brief overview. Yeah.
Okay. Well, pistis is the Greek kind of root word that gets translated as faith sure. or faithfulness. The Septuagint is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, and Septuagint uses pistis for this section, the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. And then when Paul translates it, he translates it as the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. But the way we translate the New Testament with pistis is often by faith.
By faith, yeah.
I think it's better keeping it by his faithfulness and seeing that faithfulness or that faithful person as being Jesus. And he's like the best example of faithfulness, not only to God, but to us. To God as the human representative for yeah. what we all should look like, and to us by, like, you know, subjecting himself to death on a cross on our behalf.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful picture to think that you're living as a righteous person. If you're a righteous person, you're not living according to how much faith you can conjure up.
Yeah.
How faithful you can be.
Well, that whole thing is I don't have enough faith. It's yeah. like the most tragic statement a Christian could utter.
Totally.
It treats faith as some sort of like material you pour into a container. And if you have enough in the container, like you can ride the ride or whatever it is. But
yeah.
Faith is loyalty and trust. Or Abraham Bates, I think it's Abe Bates, does faith by allegiance, or he does salvation by allegiance alone. Which, you know, anybody who knows the solos should remember it's salvation by grace alone through faith
yeah.
alone. He translates faith as allegiance, loyal trust.
Loyal allegiance.
I think that's really helpful.
Well, that reminds me of Lamentations 3:22, which is a picture of the Lord's faithfulness. Because of the Lord's faithful love, we do not perish, for his mercies never end. They're new every morning, for great is your faithfulness. I say, the Lord is my portion, therefore I will put my hope in him. Man, faithful love of the Lord, the great faithfulness of the Lord is painted there in the prophets, you know. And that's, I think that's just a beautiful picture.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Psalm 100, for the Lord is good and his faithful love endures forever, his faithfulness through all generations. You have these different pictures of God's faithfulness upon generation upon generation.
Maybe one of the things that we could explore a little bit is this idea of wrestling with God's faithfulness, because
that's great.
I'm thinking specifically in the context of suffering.
Yep.
Because when you're suffering and when you're in pain, you are tempted sometimes to think, maybe God's abandoned me.
Yep.
Maybe he's forgotten me. And so it's kind of trippy, because in Psalm 89, it begins with, I will sing the steadfast love of the Lord forever. With my mouth, I will make known your faithfulness to all generations. So he's like, it's this like declarative thing, like, hey, I'm going to make known the faithfulness of God. And then you read all the way to 38. But now you have cast off and rejected. You are full of wrath against your anointed. You have renounced the covenant with your servant. You have defiled his crown in the dust. Down to 46. How long, O Lord, will you hide yourself forever? Verse 49, Lord, where is your steadfast love of old, which by your faithfulness you swore to David? And then last verse 52, blessed be the Lord forever. Amen and amen.
Wait, did I miss something there?
Yeah. So, I know I skipped all around, but it starts with God, you are so faithful. And it's like, hey, you've renounced the covenant. This psalmist is struggling with God's faithfulness. So suffering can lead us to question God's faithfulness.
I think the cool part about Psalm 89 is it's the end of book four, right? And so that amen and amen, praise be the Lord forever, is kind of the indicator that you've reached the end of a section, but the original psalm most probably stopped at 51, verse 51. And it's that that whole narrative arc of that part of the psalm book is about God's faithfulness and loyalty to Israel in the context of exile.
Yeah.
And it's like, you promised all these things.
Yeah.
How are you going to possibly make good on this? Because look what you've done to us. And I think it's a beautiful picture of lament and trust in God's faithfulness, but being honest about your experience. And Psalm 89 to me is the picture of faithfulness.
Yeah.
Like, so only a faithful person
could say. So what do you make of that? It starts off with, I'm going to declare your faithfulness. And he's like, hey, you've cast us off and you've rejected your covenant. What do you make of that, McGregor? How is the psalmist doing that in the same verse?
This psalm is so rad. So, I mean, we could spend our whole time on this psalm, but he starts off with this praise thing. He talks about God's faithfulness to him, and then he talks about how God is promising to raise up the Messiah, essentially, to establish this Davidic line forever, kind of repeat some of the Samuel stuff, and then looks the narrative arc of the psalm, the way the poetry works, is an invitation into this picture, and then setting it up as a pulling the rug and an accusation against God. You've rejected, you've spurned, you've been very angry with your anointed one. And if you look at like that whole section, I think what the psalm is actually talking about is not just the exile of Israel, but the death of the Messiah. And how is this possibly going to turn out?
I guess I would say this then maybe helpful for the believer who's suffering, who may be struggling with the faithfulness of God and how's God being faithful to me in this time, is to look at the psalm and go, well, we know the whole story. We have the whole Bible. What's happening is that this story's not over.
Yeah.
Yes, Israel was exiled. Yes, the Messiah was killed.
Mm-hmm. Who can escape the power of the grave?
But
what's your former great love?
Yeah.
Like, you can be honest in that.
And God's the story's not over. The Messiah comes back to life, right? God's people aren't going to live in exile forever. They're going to be brought home. So I just think that even in the wider context of that psalm, we can apply that to our lives by saying, even when I'm struggling and wondering where's the faithfulness of God when the pain is so real,
The
story is not over. And God will not
abandon chosen one.
Yeah, he will not abandon you. He will fulfill his word.
But, you know, it's funny, it's to not pull, to not always think so abstract. A lot of times when you're running through a suffering moment, it's hard to place yourself in that. And I wonder if there are people who are kind of listening who are struggling with the faithfulness of God right now, and they're like, it's hard to get above that. I mean, I can just think, even a personal story for me, I'll just kind of lay my cards on the table and say, when COVID kind of took over and seemingly is taking over again, I mean we had all these dreams for Imprint Church and what was happening, and the, you know, we had all these things that were on our mind, our board had been praying about, and we felt like God was leading us to do, and bringing you on the team, McGregor, you know, thinking about having two services at Bothell, and Imprint Woodinville was filling back up again. There was a lot of good things that were going on. And it was like, yeah, God's faithfulness. He's so faithful to us. And then everything just blew up, you know, around COVID time. And I admit to you that I felt a little of the Psalm 89 feel at that point. This was kind of a death of something, and I felt it. And like, it's easy during that time to really question God's faithfulness, or sometimes even your own craziness or whatever it is. Right. Like, you know, Lord, are you there? Were you in this in the first place? You know, but to really feel that deeply of struggling with God, is he good? Is he being, is he being true to his character? Is he being true to his word in the middle of this whole thing? And I think that, you know, to find yourself in the middle of Psalm 89 is part of the Christian walk. Honestly, it's part of the time of actually questioning you know, whether he's good or not. And that's not always a bad thing.
I mean, the psalmists are doing that, right?
Totally.
But yep. I think what's crucial to keep in mind so that you don't end up in despair and hopelessness is to remind yourself, this story is not over.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not over.
Yeah.
So we can't charge God with not keeping his word when your story's not even over. Like, God still has time to fulfill his word. Romans 8, you know, takes us to the end of the story and the resurrection and the glorification of all of God's people and the renewal of the entire creation.
Yep.
Now that seems far off when you're in the middle of extreme pain, but nevertheless, you're still in the middle of your own story. God's still writing your story.
Gene, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Have you had a time in your life that you've experienced kind of that middle of Psalm 89 thing where you're really questioning the faithfulness of God in the midst, maybe suffering or maybe not experiencing like the green pastures of Psalm 23, if you will? You're walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Have you had a moment like that out of curiosity?
Oh, I don't know. Let me think.
I put you on the spot.
Yeah, you did. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've been listening to you guys talk and I don't know. I don't question his faithfulness to me, but little background. I have lupus. Huh. I've had lupus since we had Cody, it's 17 years. Mm. And I've had several flare-ups. And what I've learned from these experiences, and I'm presently in a flare-up right now, the longest flare-up I've ever been in, almost 4 years now, like 3.5 years. Yeah. But what I always think back to is how he has delivered me from past flare-ups. And so I know, like, I trust him that he will deliver me again. And so I often, when I am in a low spot, I don't question so much his faithfulness, but I always wonder, you know, like, I always wonder, what is it that he will do with this later on? You know, like you know, like what is it that I need to look for? And what is it that I, that one day I can give him glory with this? Mm-hmm. So and this is, you know, several flare-ups, but but there have been times where I'm just like, you know, how much longer?
Yeah.
How much longer?
Yeah.
How long, Lord?
How long? And lupus it doesn't flare up the same every time. Huh. So it's not something where you go, oh, I need to take these medicines and then I'll be better. Or I need to bump up on these medicines. Because every flare-up has been different. Mm. My first flare-up, I had brain vasculitis. I was bleeding in my brain.
Oh, man.
And I was just bleeding everywhere. I was bleeding in different organs. Mm. And then the second flare-up, I lost vision in one of my eyes, and I needed eye surgery. And this past flare-up, I've lost my singing voice because I have a flare-up in my vocal cords. So it's always different. And Chiang says, you know, maybe because he's in medicine, God gives him all the interesting cases in our family to keep him humble, you know? And I'm like, oh.
You're like, that's not what I want.
But so I don't know if I question his faithfulness. I believe he is almighty and he's all-knowing. So I almost fear to question that.
That's good.
But I do long for deliverance more than anything.
But I hear you saying don't miss the moment. Don't miss what God is teaching you.
No, don't. Huh. Yeah. Huh. So, the other thing that I've learned also during, and this might be kind of a rabbit trail, but like the other thing that I've learned was to don't get in the way of him teaching others to extend blessing to your family.
Huh.
So
what do you mean by that?
So when I first got very sick 17 years ago, our pastor's wife, this is when we lived in Arizona, she came up to me and she said, Gene, this is going to be very difficult for you, but you are going to learn how to receive blessing. And she said, there's going to be a lot of people. We were in a church plant, and we didn't know a lot of, not, we didn't know everyone. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of people reaching out to help. Mm-hmm. And I was a new mom, so I was very protective of, you know, our family, mm-hmm. our new baby, and also not knowing what I'm doing, you know, as my new mom. I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing.
As new parents always as are.
A, yeah. So, like, completely clueless mm-hmm. and a bit shy about that. And she just said to me, she's like, you know, you've always been the doer. And right now, you know, God's kind of taken that away from you. But now people want to do stuff for you. Mm. So you have to really learn to say yes. And so they were, and I really took that to heart. And she's, and part of it was she was saying, God is going to prompt them to be a blessing to you. Mm. So don't get in the way of that. Mm. Because it might be the first time they're responding to God that way. Mm-hmm. And so my job was to say, yes, thank you. And so I said, yes, thank you to a lot of strangers coming to my house to hold my baby. And they would bring food and they were like, you guys go have a date at the dining table and I'll hold your baby. And I'm like, I don't know who you are, but okay.
would it be accurate to say that you were experiencing some of the faithfulness of God through others? Because I guess that could bridge us to the question of, if this is a fruit of the Spirit, then the faithfulness of God that we experience is supposed to be something that God wants to produce in us.
Yeah,
toward
so
others, right?
God's faithfulness is our example. How do we live out that faithfulness?
And so I'm
how
just thinking of Gene's
faithful?
Story of people coming alongside and being a blessing. Like, we experience God's faithfulness through other people.
Exactly.
Like, people mediate God's grace mm-hmm. to one another. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's a question, is what does the faithfulness of God look like lived out in our lives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the second category of question here for us that we need to explore. This is part of our idea, like faithfulness to us. I've heard it said before that being faithful is more important than being successful. I've heard that talked about in many different contexts, especially in pastoral ministry. You know, mm-hmm. faithfulness is really important, and faithfulness is a really... you know, a characteristic of someone that I think, even as Tom kind of mentioned earlier, Tom Regan did, that our culture values as well, like a faithful character, a faithful man, a faithful human being, keeping your word. These are really important parts. So how do we, I guess that's the question we lay on the table here. How do we learn to be faithful, and how do we allow the Spirit of God to allow?
Man, I think what you were saying, Gene, about learning to be faithful in the midst of suffering looks like looking for how God is actively working in our lives, mm-hmm. Expecting him to use his normal channels, which seem to be most often other people, to stay in relationship with him by saying, how long, O Lord, by doing the Psalm 89 thing and not being afraid to express our real thoughts, feelings, desires to him, even if it feels unreligious, I guess, you know, like there's that faithfulness to God in the midst of life. And especially, I think it's tested when our circumstances are not what they would want. But then there's also that faithfulness to God by our relationship to other people, you know, like, I'm faithful to God to the extent that I image him in my relationships to my neighbor, to my spouse, to my friends, my family, mm-hmm. my church. So maybe that looks like bringing a meal and you're seeing the Spirit produce faithfulness in the life of other people as you say yes, and he's producing it in you as you say yes, you know, like, I don't know. Those are the categories I think of.
Well, couldn't that be a big part of it, too, is just the willingness or sensitivity to say yes to the Lord as you're speaking about that? To faithfulness feels like, you know, I think we think of it as like a gray-haired woman or man who's lived a Christian life for years mm-hmm. and years, which is true, but couldn't it also be the person who says, I want to be saying yes to the Lord in my day-to-day life, like mm-hmm. just the little things, even like standing in the grocery line and listening to what the Holy Spirit might say to you about talking to that person mm-hmm. or sharing an encouraging word or calling a friend who's part of the church that you haven't talked to in a long time, or stepping out in your generosity group and serving or something like that, you know?
I think that's the thing that we are afraid of doing when we say the righteous shall live by faithfulness, and confusing faith and faithfulness, mm. is that we're afraid that faithfulness is primarily about righteous action.
Mm-hmm.
I think
getting it right, obedience, or
yeah, you know, it, I think true faithfulness isn't the obedience itself, but it's the loyal trust in another person,
hmm.
Namely God, that produces obedience. But it's not the obedience itself.
Hmm.
That's how I'm like making sense of it.
So willingness, in a sense,
yeah, more like than what you were talking about, it's the the willingness to say yes because there's that faithful, loyal trust. That God is trustworthy. And so when he says the good life looks like laying your life down for another, I trust him and will be faithful. And so I will obey.
It's good. Good.
I think one of the things that I think about in terms of us being faithful, like how it's that constant question in this series of it's the fruit of the Spirit.
How does it produce?
How does he produce this in us? Like, what are we supposed to be doing?
Yeah.
And we like to, it feels good to systematize things, right? And like step-by-step things. And I just think there's such a relational, organic process mm-hmm. in our relationship with the Lord that you can't systematize this. Like, I just think, like, what are the practices? What are the rhythms of life? Like, I just think if I am developing a consistent habit of spending time with the Lord, being in community with his people, not thinking I can do this Christian life in isolation from Christian community, being in worship, being in his word, serving in ways, being faithful to my wife and to my kids, wanting to be a good husband, wanting to be a good dad, that if these things are kind of essentials in my life and I'm working toward those and I'm relying upon the Lord to be what's the word, like faithful in those, I guess in those realms, yeah. like he's producing in me a character so that if I commit to something, I'm naturally as a person going to want to keep my word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yep.
like flakiness. I mean, getting down to like practical levels, like flakiness is a big problem, you know, especially among, I don't know. Are there demographics?
Totally. Totally.
I feel like I've experienced something, you know, and flakiness kind of can drive me crazy. And I don't want to be a flaky person. Like if I say I'm going to do something, I want to keep my word, right? Yeah. Not because I'm trying to aspire to some like level of perfection, but God keeps his word. So shouldn't I keep my word?
Yeah.
You know? So
if it is a fruit of the Spirit of God and the Spirit of God is producing things like his character, it's going to produce faithfulness in us.
I guess that was a roundabout, meandering, blathering kind of way of saying I'm not sure how it's produced, but I feel like in my relationship with the Lord, he works in me a desire to be obediently faithful for the right reasons and to keep my word because he keeps his word.
I love how Paul wants to know. Go ahead, Jean. Yes.
I Rex sent me a text and said, please talk about this. So
Rex is working behind the scenes over here. Okay, Rex, share my new favorite one
I'm
now.
I'm trying to think of like, how do I segue into this? but to respond to Tom Regan, the question of, you know, like there's no like step-by-step process. And I can share my experience was, I want to say like about, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years ago, I had this, you know, and I guess for my experience is it starts from like what God has placed in our hearts. Like, you know, like, I mean, we're naturally inclined to certain things. We're naturally, our heart naturally are drawn to certain things. And for me, it was, when the Syrian crisis happened for I got a little concerned about the conversation about refugees.
Yeah.
And I started praying at that time, you know, like how do I participate in refugee relief? You've stirred this in my heart. Like I really felt God stirring this in my heart. But then I live, like at that time, I think we were in Bothell by then. And I just felt like we're so far away from even the resettlement here in Washington, because down in Tequila, in Kent, where relief is in South Seattle. And I did try to like drive down and teach couponing classes. I tried to do certain things, and I just felt like, you know, and Chiang and I had this conversation, like, you know, God's stirring this in my heart, but like it's so far away. And he's like, do you want to move there? And we're like, we just committed to planting with imprint. I'm like, I don't think that's where God wants us. So it was became this like quiet prayer that I had for several years of, you know, like, how do I like, Lord, like, show me where you, what do you want me to do with this? You put this in my heart. You clearly stirred this. Mm. And I guess what happened was I was faithful in prayer that God would show me what would happen next.
Yeah.
And then 3 years ago, I was presented with this interesting idea of, would you like to give away a few boxes of food in front of your house? And also the other part of the stirring was also, I had this friend who moved to Kirkland, and she had an ice cream social in her neighborhood. And at that moment, when she shared it with me, it sounded so fun. And I said, I want to be her neighbor because I want to go to that party. <You know? laughs>
I want ice cream.
Yeah, I want ice cream. Like, I want to be cool to go to her, like, be her neighbor, you know? Yeah. And then at that very moment, I like, that thought came to my mind. I was like, no, that shouldn't be how I should be thinking. Mm. Like, I could do that. Like, why do I just want to participate that way? Why don't I? Like, I could do it too. So then I started praying, like, how do I bloom where I'm planted? And you see that everywhere, you know, like, bloom where you're planted. And it's very, you know, like, almost cliche. But it really did make me wonder, like, okay, I, you know, like, what can I do here? We're kind of new in town. We're new. We moved to Bothell and we're kind of new. So, and I've been getting to know some of my neighbors, but, you know, how do I do this? So then the food got presented to me, and I really felt like I shouldn't say no. But I didn't know how I was going to do it because I don't have a sheltered area where I can put food out. So anyways, we did it. I said, we'll do a trial of 3 months. And I started offering food from my driveway. And we had a timed event. And I started a Facebook group, and it was a gleaning group. And I told everybody it's a reduced food waste group. And, you know, it's all leftover food that didn't sell, didn't get taken from food co-op. And later on, food banks started sharing food with us, too. Mm-hmm. But it was, I don't know, I just felt like God was faithful to the stirring in my heart. Mm. Like, he stirred my heart. And I kept praying that, you know, like, God, show me what you want me to do with this. And it took a long time. Mm. And he blessed it. Mm. And we were able to get to know our neighbors, get to encourage our neighbors to be generous with the food they have. And I really applied a lot of what Imprint is about, being generous, like helping people see that the food that we offer is not just for them, but for them to share with others and to extend that generosity. And what is beautiful about that is that, there were a few people that came up to me and said, you know, like, I know you're a Christian and I know you're doing God's work.
Yeah.
And
I know who you are.
I know who you are. You know? It was so awkward. It was so awkward. Like, there was one woman, she came up to me and there were like other people around. And she's like, you're a Christian. I know you are. Right. And I'm like, yeah, I am. But, you know, and then somebody said, oh, is this part of a church thing? And I'm like, no, it's not. But I am a believer and what I do is informed by my faith. And so it was like kind of a way of sharing my faith, but not like, you know, like, I never want to like force it down someone's throat. But yeah, but God has blessed it. We've done it for 3 years and
you're giving away a lot of food now.
Now we're giving away a lot of food. The pandemic has really changed things.
Yeah.
But
you were responding to God's faithfulness by being faithful yourself. I mean, this is what we've been talking about the whole time. And in that slow process of God actually answering a prayer that you prayed 6-7 years ago, maybe even longer ago from the refugee crisis, how can I help? What can I do? And the Lord kind of answered that prayer along the way. And what it's required of you now, though, is to continue to be faithful. I imagine you're not always excited about giving away that much food or trying to organize the things that you're supposed to. Or I imagine it doesn't all, it sounds like, you know, a rose garden, but I imagine you put in a lot of work to make this happen, haven't you, Jean?
There is a lot of work. Yeah. But like I wrote down three things, which was like, I wrote trust and obey. And so I, like when I was preparing, which I could have done a better job, but trust and obey, and then participate in the work that he's brought to you. Huh. And I feel like that is my like response.
Wait, that's a word of the Lord, I think, for the moment. You said trust and obey and participate in the work that he's brought to you.
So yeah, I think being, the idea of being faithful where you are, like wherever you are, yeah, just be faithful. And you know, there's that parable about like he's faithful with a little bit, will be given more, right? So
yeah, exactly. Yep.
So if he gives you little, then he may decide in his wisdom to give you more. And it seems like, at least in terms of the food ministry, he's given you more because you're faithful with a little, and now you're being faithful with much. And
yeah.
And in the end, you know, we often talk about this in life and ministry. It's like in the end, like what does it say? Well done, good and faithful servant.
Yeah, that's
like
Matthew 25, right? The parable of the ten talents, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you can bury it, you can do whatever, but the one who actually invested it, mm-hmm, and got more, the master said, well done, good and faithful servant,
yeah,
right? That's super cool.
Yeah.
And that's, you've got that, Gene. I mean, that's what's in the process right now. I can almost hear the Lord saying, well done, good and faithful servant, you've invested in what I've given to you. And that's pretty cool. That's a picture of faithfulness in my mind. So
yeah,
thank you
for that.
It's
brought me into so many relationships with so many people, and yeah, and that was, and brought others into relationship with one another, and that actually you know, I would have never imagined that was how God wanted me to participate not necessarily refugee work, but the whole idea that, you know, we want to be a welcoming community.
Yeah.
We want, as our neighborhood diversifies so rapidly,
yeah,
I wanted to have that feeling of not alienating one another or isolating ourselves from one another. And so,
love it.
He, you know, the essence of what he stirred in my heart, he accomplished through this, and I had no idea that it would look this way. It would be accomplished this way. So it was kind of being open and trusting him, and just like being obedient step by step. Yeah.
I think that is a beautiful way to wrap up today on faithfulness, to hear not only a biblical theology and a work through the scriptures and hear about the character of God, but to recognize, that we can image God in the way that we are generous, in the way that we show his faithfulness to the world around us too. So thanks for sharing that story, Gene. That was super meaningful and compelling. And I sure hope today was a helpful reminder of God's faithfulness, his faithfulness to us in our wanderings, in the Israelite wanderings, in our own stories, and also a compelling example of how we ought to live lives under the Spirit of God, being faithful as God was faithful to us. So thanks for joining us today, you guys. It was great to have you. Thanks for listening. Hope you come back for our next podcast on the fruit of the Spirit. Otherwise, have a great day.
Buenas tardes.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.